Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
I don't know, maybe it's just me, but the news the past couple of weeks has come straight out of the dictionary of complicated economic terms. We've had to digest things like mark-to-market or commercial paper, things you don't necessarily know what they mean unless you deal with market crises all the time. And today, well, it was true to form. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. And by Bank of America, through community outreach, philanthropic giving, and environmental efforts, finding opportunity and embracing it. Bank of America, Bank of Opportunity. bankofamerica.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today's the 17th of August. It's a Friday, and it is great to have you here. Most investors and a whole lot of economists have been calling for the Federal Reserve to do something, anything, to make the pain stop on Wall Street. For a week and a half, they got nothing. And then, an hour before the opening bell today, the Federal Reserve made its move. It cut interest rates, but not the rate most of us are familiar with. That would be the federal funds rate, what banks charge each other to borrow money overnight. It's the Fed's big policy tool, the one they meet to talk about every 6 weeks or so, the one that can affect things like your mortgage. What they cut this morning was something called the discount rate, what banks have to pay to borrow from the Fed itself. It's usually higher than the federal funds rate, a percentage point higher, so banks use it only when they're in a bind, like they've been the past couple of weeks. Today, the Fed cut the discount rate half a percentage point to help them out. Our New York Bureau Chief Jill Barshay has more.
Last week, the Federal Reserve pumped cash into the market to help keep interest rates stable. But it wasn't enough to soothe financial institutions' nerves about lending money to each other. So this morning, the Fed stepped in to play banker. Alan Levinson is the chief economist at T. Rowe Price. He said the Fed not only cut the special discount rate for banks, it's also letting them keep the money for 30 days. Usually banks have to pay it back overnight. That could help companies like Countrywide Mortgage, which owns a bank. Countrywide found it couldn't raise money by selling commercial paper.
It almost has the function of the Fed replacing commercial paper type borrowing for many of these institutions. What the Fed is saying is, we'll be your lender if the normal counterparty that doesn't want to accept your collateral in exchange for a loan will be your lender now.
The Fed's move to cut the discount rate is a switch from last week when it said it was worried about inflation. Glenn Yeager is an economist at the Milken Institute. He says those inflation worries are still here, but the market turmoil is a more urgent concern. He says the Fed is taking the most cautious steps it can to calm things down.
There's no indication of why you would want to fully, rapidly reduce rates, then you really would have you'd let slip the dogs of inflation.
The Fed is keeping its fingers crossed that the market will stay on the upswing after today. But if this discount rate cut doesn't do the trick long term, the Fed may have no other option left but to take the third step, lowering interest rates. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
There were a couple of other stories out of the market this week that are worth mentioning. First of all, commodities. Nice gains today along with everything else. But in case you somehow missed the rest of the week, not so good. Gold tumbled 3% yesterday. Investors were selling to cover their losses in stocks. Strange for something supposed to be a safe haven. The other thing is the dollar. It gave up a 7-week high against other major currencies when the Fed cut the discount rate today. Here's an idea to make your summer more enjoyable. Turn off the phone. Sounds kind of nice, right? And it is, if the turnoff is voluntary. It's another thing entirely if your business depends on your phone line and it goes away without notice. A lot of companies have switched to a cheaper way of making their calls, over the internet with a service called VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol. Skype is probably the most popular company out there offering VoIP, and Marketplace's Lisa Napoli reports it suffered a pretty unpopular glitch the past couple of days.
8 million or so people use Skype around the world every day. What's happened over the last 24 hours or so is the internet equivalent of a phone line gone dead. The company's blaming the problem on a software glitch, and it says on its blog that it isn't because of a hack. But Tim Boyd of American Technology Research says when you have so many people using this kind of new system,
stuff does happen.
Boyd says over the last few years, Skype's become a basic business tool for small companies since it lets you call computer to computer anywhere in the world for free and from a computer to a regular phone much cheaper than from a traditional landline. If you rely on it, even a bit of downtime can be a problem, as a lot of users have found out.
These guys basically had 12, 24 hours where they couldn't use Skype anymore, which is serious.
It may act like a phone, but that doesn't mean Skype's as reliable as one. Of course, the company has other problems. Its quarterly revenue doubled over the last year to $90 million, but it still doesn't make a profit. A couple of years ago, online auction giant eBay bought Skype for more than $2.5 billion, and industry analyst Glenn Fleischman says,
it's still unclear how they're going to monetize Skype. I'm not sure it was a smart buy.
Seems like at a time when this voice over internet protocol technology is so hot, Skype must have some sort of potential. 220 million people have reportedly signed up for accounts, even if they don't all use them. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
Here's a way to pass the hours next time you find yourself crammed in the middle seat on a packed airliner. Try to guess which carrier is on track to become the biggest airline in the world by the end of the year, as measured by the number of passengers it carries. I'll tell you right now, you're not going to come up with the right answer, no matter how long that flight is. But here's a hint. The winner only flies in one country. Stacey Vanek Smith has that story.
Southwest Airlines hauled more than 40 million people around the U.S. during the first 5 months of 2007. That's going to put it ahead of American Airlines this year as the world's biggest carrier in terms of passenger volume. Southwest's Beth Harbin says it's not just a regional airline anymore.
Southwest is offering that Southwest Airlines brand of service to the entire country.
The 36-year-old carrier only flies domestic routes and serves a lot of very small airports. So how did it get so big?
It is a customer service organization that happens to fly airplanes. That's the key to its success.
That's David Field with Airline Business Magazine. He says people like Southwest so much that towns actually lobby the airline to serve their communities.
I have never seen an unfriendly Southwest employee, and I don't know anyone who's had a truly horrible experience with Southwest the same way people have horrible experiences with other airlines.
Field says Southwest has stayed lean and cleverly stocked up on fuel when gas prices were low. But airline analyst Richard Abulafia says revenue is a much more important number than passenger volume. And he says last year American Airlines came in fourth among U.S. carriers in terms of revenue. Southwest came in 17th.
They're hauling an awful lot of passengers, but they're hauling them for relatively short distances in a low-profit commodity market, basically bus travel with wings.
Abulafia says American, UAL, and Delta are dropping those domestic routes so they can focus on more lucrative international flights. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
I'll be completely honest with you. Friday couldn't have come soon enough for business reporters this week. We'll have the details and a chat with a man in Dallas when we do the numbers. Here we are, mid-August, the perfect time for a beach vacation. We've asked some of our commentators to send along their nominations for the best business beach books out there. Titles that won't put you to sleep, just make you smarter, all while you dig your toes into the sand. For today's final installment, writer Harriet Rubin recommended a contemporary novel about the beauty of innovation.
Orhan Pamuk's My Name is Red is a murder mystery set in 16th century Istanbul. The first voice you hear is that of a murdered corpse speaking from the bottom of a well. This corpse is, appropriately, the last gasp of tradition, an artist who had been painting a book of two-dimensional Persian miniatures to celebrate the Sultan's glories. Was the killer a master of the new realistic style of European painting that could make a woman like Mona Lisa look so real her eyes could magically follow you around the room? My Name is Red is a riveting case study in how innovation conquers minds, then markets, and finally empires. The excitement of this new method of beauty was the downfall of the Ottoman Empire. Beauty, Pamuk writes, summons us toward life's abundance, toward compassion, toward respect for the colors of the realm. Why are products like iPhones or Prada shoes so coveted? Because they're beautiful. In a sea of commodity sameness, beauty stands out. The young Steve Jobs, on the verge of creating the Macintosh, spent hours studying the Porsches parked at Hewlett-Packard. Business is superb at creating consistency, like a Persian copyist. But beauty requires more. Pamuk followed his own lessons. My Name is Red took him to a new level of artistry. Pamuk won the Nobel Prize in Literature last year.
Harriet Rubin is the author of Dante in Love and the Mona Lisa Stratagem. If you want to see the list of listener suggestions for good business beach books, our website is marketplace.org. Time to check the week on Wall Street with our stockbroker business analyst friend David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. How are you today, David?
Oh, man, you've got a shell of the former David Johnson. This has been a long, tough week.
I can only say quit your complaining, because really, you guys got bailed out today.
Well, that remains to be seen, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, today just could have been horrible. Well, I mean, look at, first of all, you know how the dominoes fall and you look at the foreign markets. You know, the Japanese market had its worst sell-off in 7 years, and selling begat selling, and the European markets were down, and Lord knows this has not been the most stable of weeks. And then you've got Friday, and everybody's always scared of Friday because you never know when Hurricane Dean or Pollyanna or whoever is going to come up and bite you, or you never know which mortgage company is going to go bust or which bank's going to go bust or what sort of, you know, stuff is going to fall out of the closet. So we were set up, some said for, you know, a multi-hundred point drop today. And of course, the great thing is that the shorts, those scavengers, those people who make money when stocks go down,
We're
all waiting for this big drop off this morning, and along came the Fed.
All right. Well, hang on a second. Do you think Bernanke woke up this morning and saw the Nikkei down 5.4% and said, "Holy moly, I have to do something"?
Yeah, I think they had it in line yesterday, because I think you could see this coming, and the banks were holding on to all of their money. But I'm telling you, the old boy looked pretty good today. In fact, I talked to the former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve, very well-respected man, Bob McTiernan, and I asked him what he thought about it.
Yeah, most likely it's going to be considered Bernanke's finest hour. And probably it was made finer by the fact that he hesitated so long and was so reluctant to do anything like this until he finally did.
All right, now wait, hold it. He's going to get extra credit for having left everybody screaming for him to do something for 10 days?
No. It's timing. It's timing. It's when you're telling a joke or anything else. It's timing is everything. And you got to remember where these guys came from. Now, these jerks, these learned gentlemen who...
Yes.
Put out the Federal Reserve statements here just 10 days ago. We were making, I think it was you.
No, you.
Was making, anyway, where somebody was making fun of them because they left this inflation statement in. Remember we
crumpled up
the paper because it was so angry. And it was so stupid, but they left this in, they were fury about inflation 10 days ago, and then you can't come along 10 days later and suddenly cut interest rates, which is just the antithesis of that. So he had to do... You know, he had to go through some contortions, and believe me, I think we really needed it. There was an argument that we were going to open up into an absolute abyss this morning. It was Friday. It was one of those option expiration days.
And yet here we are.
Yeah.
Up a couple hundred points on a Friday. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David.
And we get to do this all again on Monday, right?
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, right? Coming up, the latest fashions for Fido.
I will read Vogue, Elle, and Bazaar, and see what colors and what patterns and what fabrics are going to be very popular for the coming season.
Yeah, that was a dog you heard barking in the background. But first, let's do the numbers. In the money, indeed, the Dow Industrials jumped 1.8%, or 233 points to 13,079. The Nasdaq bounced 2.2%, or 53 points to 2,505. The S&P 500 popped up 2.4%, or 34 points to 1,445. For the week, the Dow dipped 1.2%. The Nasdaq down 1.6%. The S&P 500 0.5% lower. Financial firms led the charge higher today. Mortgage lender Countrywide Financial ended more than 13%. On the upside, J.P. Morgan rose 3.33%. Bank of America jumped 3.75%. Bonds traded off. The yield on the 10-year T-note ticked up to 4.67%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Marketplace is podcasting. Marketplace Takeout is a mix of our best stories from the past week, the cream of the crop from our reporters around the world, delivered to you on the go wherever you are. Want to sign up? Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link at the top of the page. Or you can download entire shows of Marketplace and Marketplace Money at audible.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here are events for Monday, August 20th. VoiceCon kicks off in San Francisco. The trade conference on voice recognition technology will last 4 days. On this day in 1866, the National Labor Union called on Congress to mandate an 8-hour workday. Workers didn't get the law passed until 1916. And a nod to those who still work more than 8 hours a day. On Monday, Lazy Boy celebrates its 20th anniversary of listing on the New York Stock Exchange. I'm Alex Schmidt.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Even the most environmentally conscious among us can never be truly green because there are things that are just too hard to give up, either personally or professionally. That carbon-spewing business flight across the country or a solo car trip down to the supermarket. But our desire to do something has spawned a new guilt-based industry called carbon offsetting, basically paying someone else to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions you or your company are unwilling to cut yourselves. And there is a lot of money being thrown around. From American Radio Works, Claire Schoen reports.
In the U.S., where carbon is not yet regulated, a voluntary market in carbon offsets has sprung up. Companies are buying them to green their image, and consumers, worried about their impact on global warming, are getting interested as well. You can go up on a website today, enter the destination of your upcoming vacation, and then pay a fee to offset the CO2 emissions from your plane flight with new trees. Some of those trees are being planted at Kibali National Park, Uganda. The Uganda Wildlife Authority has contracted with a carbon offset company called the FACE Foundation to plant 86,000 acres of native trees. Uganda gets money to plant the trees, and FACE gets carbon credits for the CO2 those trees will soak up from the atmosphere as they grow. Then FACE sells the carbon credits to industries and to consumers. Dan Lashoff, a climate scientist at the National Resources Defense Council, says there are several reasons why tree planting has been the most popular offset option till now.
Because it's relatively inexpensive, and conceptually it's maybe easier to grasp, and so that there's a public relations value of saying you're putting carbon into the atmosphere from your tailpipe, and you've got a tree somewhere that's taking carbon out of the atmosphere and putting it into the tree.
Sam Wanda is in charge of planting the trees for the Uganda Wildlife Authority.
We're going to plant the trees that get the carbon from the atmosphere. And as it grows, we all are able to, you know, save the world, so to say.
But the planting here has come at a cost to the local population. At a village about a mile from the Kibali tree plantation, subsistence farmers say they were driven off the land where these trees are now being planted. Speaking through a translator, one farmer explained what happened to him.
I was in Chivale National Park before coming here. It was police and the military that came in and forcefully evicted us by a process of burning houses. Everything of my household was burnt.
But Sam Wanda of the Uganda Wildlife Authority says the farmers were squatters living in the park illegally. Along with the social costs of this operation, there's also debate about whether trees actually work as carbon offsets at all. Climate scientist Dan Lashoff says that's because trees are only effective in holding carbon while they're standing. When they die and decompose, the process is reversed.
And that would take all the carbon dioxide that over a period of years was taken out of the atmosphere and put it back in the atmosphere very quickly. And at the end of the day, you haven't accomplished what you were planning to accomplish.
Lashoff says because of this, trees are becoming less popular as offsets. He prefers cow manure. And there's a lot of it at the Wholesome Dairy in eastern Wisconsin. Manure releases methane, a greenhouse gas that's 23 times more destructive than CO2. A company called Driving Green has contracted with the dairy to buy carbon credits for capturing the methane that's released from their cow's manure. Dwayne Tungus, U.S. manager for Driving Green, was at the Wholesome Dairy recently to check out his offset project.
The dairy we're visiting here today, at one time the manure would have went into a storage lagoon, and methane is then emitted into the atmosphere. What Driving Green does is we work with people to help them capture that methane. Because of the fact that we can document that methane was not emitted, we can sell it as an offset.
You can see the grates inside the pre-salts.
Yeah.
And we'll just push our manure down into that. And then we have gravity flow from here to the digester.
As farmer Ken Bulow explains, the digester captures the methane released from the manure and then uses this natural gas to run an electrical generator.
Our electricity goes out to the grid, so we sell it all back to the utility. And that's what makes it economic, makes us allowed to do it, is a generation of electrical power.
So, the farmer is making money from the carbon offsets, and Driving Green is investing in an offset project that looks attractive to environmentally minded customers, betting that consumers will become more savvy about exactly where their offsets are coming from. I'm Claire Schoen for Marketplace and American Radio Works.
For more about entrepreneurs staking a claim in the environment business, there's a link to Green Rush. It's a new documentary from American Radio Works on our website. It's marketplace.org. Fashion Week is set to kick off tomorrow in New York City. Strictly speaking, I suppose it should be called Pet Fashion Weekend since it only lasts 2 days. But it's a chance for dedicated dog lovers to spend lots and lots of money. This year, the event will feature an area grandly called the Luxury Pet Pavilion, dedicated to high-end products from crystal collars to cashmere sweaters. Yeah, for dogs. Ashley Miltite reports fancy doodads for Fido are capturing an ever-larger slice of the $40 billion a year market for pet products.
The after-work rush is set in at the Barking Zoo, a pet store in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood. One canine visitor is checking out a smaller, daintier customer. The dogs may bring charm to the store, but their owners bring in the bucks. Alan Kraus owns the Barking Zoo. He says over the past several years, owners have been pushing for increasingly specialized products to lavish upon their pets. These days, only about half his revenue comes from the basics, like food and litter, the other half from arguably more frivolous fare. He delves into a rack of colorful raincoats you could mistake for baby wear.
Here we have one that kind of zips up the chest of the dog, has a full-on hood to keep it well protected.
That coat costs $65. Kraus says he sells hundreds a year. Hanging above the raincoats, there's a tiny pink polka-dotted sundress to protect the sensitive skin of certain types of Chihuahua and other small breeds. Anna Allen came into the barking zoo with Miwosh, her Yorkshire Terrier. She says she spends $50 to $75 a month on clothing and grooming items just for him.
I don't dress myself the way I dress my dog. I dress him much better.
He's my baby. Miwosh, you're my baby.
Allen says since she doesn't have kids, she's happy to spend some of her disposable income on her beloved dog. It's people like her, often city dwellers, who are used to buying the best for themselves, who are driving the market for luxury products. Charlotte Reed is the marketing director of the Luxury Pet Pavilion. She says the market's come a long way in 10 years.
We had a few vendors with coats that look like horse blankets, you know, primarily in the same colors as the leashes that we'd find at some of the superstores.
These days, the dog fashion world follows the human one. Larry Roth is the owner of Manhattan dog boutique and grooming parlor, Precious Pets.
I will read Vogue, Elle, and Bazaar and see what colors and what patterns and what fabrics are going to be very popular for the coming season.
Then he'll ask his favorite vendors to design the correspondingly fashionable canine accoutrement. Charlotte Reed points out a gold pleather leash and collar set that sells for $75.
It's got all of the crystals on here, all the Austrian crystals. I mean, this is fabulous. My dog would wear this, and he's a boy.
This isn't just a New York and L.A. phenomenon. The companies who make the clothes, accessories, and even perfume for these pampered pooches are based in Arizona, Illinois, and Wisconsin, among other states. Many of them sell their products all over the world. Alan Krause, owner of the Barking Zoo, designs his own line of pure wool and pure cotton dog sweaters. He'll exhibit them this weekend at the Luxury Pet Pavilion. He says fancy pet products are no passing fad, and the market is far from maxed out.
Things like dog bowls that have been traditionally either just ceramic or stainless steel, you'll see that people who design decorative accessories for the home will be moving into that kind of product as well.
Krause says because so many dogs live to a ripe old age nowadays, there's lots of potential for products aimed squarely at that demographic. As for the dogs themselves, it's often the simple things in life that keep them happy. But owners can rest assured they'll be able to coddle their canine companions with more exclusive fare for years to come. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
We've got some pictures of the latest in canine couture on our website. All together now, it's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a diversified approach to fixed income can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
Here's today's final note, and it's a revelation that may leave college students reeling. Not only do 15% of China's food products fail standard safety tests, we learned today some food manufacturers there are also guilty of price fixing. A Chinese government panel says the country's biggest ramen noodle makers colluded to raise prices by as much as 40%. Noodle executives point to higher costs for ingredients. But penny-pinching soup slurpers shouldn't be too worried. Most instant ramen bowls here still go for less than a buck. And that is Marketplace on this Friday afternoon from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gained 233 points. What a week it was, 1.8%. The NASDAQ rose 53 points, 2.4%. The S&P 500 jumped 34 points. That's about 2.5% there. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is a guy named J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, lawmakers peddle a new solution to pollution.
To be home and to see with my own eyes the fact that you can do the right thing in terms of the environment. You can conserve, you can save money, and you can create jobs all in one.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.